This is side two of an IEEE orientation for accreditation presentation. So much for the general background of the accreditation process. Let's get into some of the details of how the whole thing is put together. In this regard, I'd like to focus your attention on the accreditation cycle. That is the chart that appears immediately following the section on curricular criteria, faculty criteria, etc. On this chart is shown four levels of operation. There's the so-called ECPD headquarters, the regional chairman, the visiting team member, and the dean. The regional chairman is also the team chairman's level as well. You notice the whole cycle starts sometime around the 1st of May, when the school is notified that some 18 months hence, their accreditation will expire, and what is their pleasure relative to reaccreditation. Also at this particular time, schools with new curricula will announce them to ECPD and ask them to evaluate them. At that point, the school then decides what they wish to do. The dean will advise which curricula by the 1st of June he wishes to have reevaluated. Headquarters will then start the process rolling. We'll send him a questionnaire which must be filled out. This questionnaire, for those of you who have done this before, will involve financial data, faculty data, data about students, graduates, the curriculum, and individual resumes for the faculty. So that goes back to the dean then, and at the same time, the visit dates are set by the team chairman, who has been chosen by the chairman of the EE&A committee. The team chairman is usually a regional chairman or a vice chairman or a member of the committee. But occasionally, some people who have served on the committee before are recalled if the number of visits gets too onerous. No person on the committee is expected to visit more than three schools a year. So sometime in the summer, the visit dates are set, and things go merrily along throughout the summer. The dean is gathering his information together, and it's no small task to make out one of these questionnaires. The dean must file the questionnaire submitted to the ECPD on November 1. At that time, then, a copy goes to the team chairman, and the team chairman then can see what type of a curriculum he has, what its nature is, and what the most suitable individual will be to evaluate that curriculum. He then recruits a team sometime around December to January in that neighborhood. And that team then is recruited to be a national team in character. It must be chosen from the list of visitors supplied by the societies. And it has to have one visitor for every curriculum being looked at. In some cases, it needs two visitors for every curriculum, but that's very seldom happens unless it's an extremely small curriculum or a very large curriculum. The visit dates have previously been set by the dean and the team chairman in concert, and that can occur anytime between December 1 and April 1. It's shown on the chart as occurring on January 1. It may or may not occur on that particular date. Now the visit, which is number 7, involves the regional chairman, the team chairman, I should say, the visiting team members, and the dean, of course. 2 weeks after the visit has concluded, the visitor's reports will be filed with the team chairman, and that's where you fit in the picture, because 2 weeks after you've visited the school, you're expected to file a report. And I'll talk more about that report later on. The team chairman then takes these reports and edits them to some extent, puts them all together, and he forwards them then to headquarters or they are assembled around during the month of April and May into a report which is sent out to the entire committee about the 1st of June. The E&A committee will meet the third week in June usually for the purpose of receiving the reports from the individual team chairman and considering them. The team chairman reports both in writing and orally to the E&A committee. The E&A committee will ask questions. They will ask him to defend the statements that he makes. The less creditable the mistakes are, the more he has to defend them. If the team does not provide him with adequate data, it will show up in that committee. And that committee is merciless. And the team chairman is completely dependent upon the team members' expertise in providing him with the requisite information so that he can make the story short, sweet, to the point as far as the E&A committee is concerned. The E&A committee generally will take action at that meeting. Generally speaking, they can dispose of the matter right then and there. That means that they make a recommendation coming out of the committee to the board of directors of ECPD. In general, the E&A committee likes to support the individual visitors' recommendations, but they feel no obligation nor compunction to do so. I've seen visiting team chairmen come in and recommend 6 years accreditation across the board and go out with not to accredit. And I've also seen the other inverse true, that the team chairman who've come in with a recommendation for a lesser term than what the committee thought the school should have ends up having a longer term than was recommended by the team. So it's important that the team do their very best to provide the recommendation for accreditation, and I'll speak more about what these are later on. The recommendations to the board of directors of ECPD are considered by the executive committee of the board meeting in mid-July. Now, they are empowered to take final action on all cases where there is a unanimous vote. If there is one dissent, then the executive committee must hold the matter over for the annual meeting of the ECPD at the end of September or early October. If the executive committee votes unanimously in favor of the recommendation of the E&A committee or its own recommendation, and I've seen them very rarely, but I have seen them on occasion, make a change in the recommendation of the E&A committee. If they do support it unanimously, then it becomes final and the school can be notified sometime in August or early September. This gives the school approximately 30 days in which to file an appeal, should they wish to do so, before the annual meeting of the ECPD. Now, mistakes are made. No matter how carefully the whole operation is screened, filtered, and massaged, mistakes are made on occasion. And the ECPD is, I've seen them on many occasions, turn around and reverse their actions once the error has been called to their attention. So this period then, between the 1st of September and the 1st of October, is a period when the school can, if it wishes, bring to the attention of the ECPD some additional information which they feel the ECPD did not consider in making its judgments in June and July. The board of directors then meets in September, and the accreditation actions take effect on the end of that meeting, or approximately October 1st. So you see, there's a long cycle between the time when the school first is notified or decides it wishes to come in for accreditation. That cycle is almost 18 months long, and it is a time when there's a great deal of activity on the part of a large number of people. Let us turn now to this matter of the campus visit, which is number 7 on the accreditation cycle chart. You'll find also in your orientation folder a typical visit schedule, which lists the activities involved with a visit. It all begins the day before the formal visit begins. Usually the team gathers about 6 o'clock in the evening for a team dinner. But this depends, of course, on the team chairman and also on the arrival time of the individual members. But generally speaking, most of them have gathered by 6 o'clock the night before. At 8 o'clock or sometime during the evening, the team chairman will bring the teams together and they will discuss the visit forthcoming. By the time you have arrived on the scene, you will have received from the team chairman the previous reports of the visitors, the confidential report. You will have received the questionnaire from the school, which contains all the financial information about its students and so forth. You will also receive a volume concerning the particular curriculum that you're evaluating, in this case, electrical engineering or some variant of electrical engineering. You will have read all this material from stem to stern, have memorized the whole thing, and be able to quote chapter and verse from it constantly. You will be very familiar then with both the previous team's report and the current questionnaire. There will be many questions that will have come up in your mind as you read this questionnaire, and these are brought up in the open meeting with the team chairman. The team chairman will also want to assign tasks having to do with the supporting areas such as humanities, the computer facility, the library, the chemistry department, etc. So he will ask what your hobbies are. If you're a bibliophile, then he will ask you perhaps to evaluate the library. Each member of the team generally gets some additional task in the supporting area. So at 8 o'clock then, or 7 o'clock or whatever, the team will get together and they will hold a preliminary organizational meeting. They will also organize their tasks for the following day. So on day one then, around 8:30, the dean will pick up the team and they will convene in his office on the campus. Generally, the team spends an hour with the dean alone to hear what he has to say and ask him some questions about the organizational structure of his academic unit and so forth. The team at that time, at say 9:30 or 10 o'clock, may break up and go out with the chairman representing the curriculum. What seems to becoming more accepted practice is to bring in all of the chairmen of the curricula to talk about their curricula shortly, or briefly, I should say, so that the whole team has an overall picture of the whole engineering activity. In any event, they may or may not meet with their respective chairman before the luncheon meeting. At noon on the first day, there is the only social affair that will occur involving both the school and the team. This is an opportunity for the team to host a luncheon with the dean's department chairman or anybody else that they wish to have in. The chairman of the team usually makes a few felicitous remarks, introduces his team, and chats with the president, and the team members talk with other key members of the faculty or with the campus officers. Then in the afternoon of the first day, the team members will begin meetings with faculty, students who will be visiting the facilities and the supporting disciplines. And that goes on until about 5 or 5:30. After dinner that night, the team will confer together and compare notes on their findings, and they'll set their tasks for the next day. The next morning, then, they'll continue their activities, and they will convene then at noon to prepare an oral report. By noon on the second day, every member of the team should know what his accreditation recommendation is going to be. And he makes it known at that time what his position is. I might say the night before there's a trial run, and I usually ask the question somewhat as follows. Based on the information you now have, what will be your recommendation for accreditation if you had to make it, gaining no information beyond this point? And at noon on the second day, the question will be sharper. The question will be, what will be your recommendation for accreditation? Now in the afternoon, usually around 2 or 2:30, an oral report will be made to the chief campus officer and the dean if the chief campus officer wishes him to be present. This is the school's opportunity to hear the findings of the team. Now this particular meeting must deal only with findings. It cannot deal with opinions as to what should or should not be done, nor under no circumstance will any member of the team indicate what his accreditation recommendation is going to be. Now, a smart dean and a smart president know exactly what the recommendation is going to be based on the discussion that is held by the individual team members. If the team is not going to accredit a program, the message will come through loud and clear to the dean and the chief campus officer. But we're not allowed to say anything to the dean or the chief campus officer what we're going to recommend. Then the team adjourns around 4 o'clock, and when I received my orientation, and it was awfully good advice, the advice at that point was get out of town as fast as you can. Now, 14 days later, you submit then a confidential report, which is saved in the archives of ECPD and goes back to the next team when it comes to the campus on the occasion of its next visit. You also submit at the end of 14 days a proposed statement to the institution, and there'll be more about that later on. So much then for the typical visit schedule. Let me now turn to this matter of your accreditation recommendation. There are several types of recommendations. First of all, if it's a new program and has not been accredited before, the accreditation action that you may recommend will be not to accredit if you don't think it meets the minimum standards of the profession, or to accredit for 6 years or 4 years. Generally speaking, the ENA committee will not accredit a new program for anything less than 4 years. This means that based on what you have seen, that you expect that program to meet the minimum standards of the profession for the next 4 years or 6 years, as the case may be. If it's a program that meets the minimum standards of the profession, and you think that it will still meet it 6 years hence, you will give it a 6-year accreditation. Similarly, if you feel that the program will only be accreditable for 2 or 4 years, and you must come back and visit the campus at the end of that period of time, you'll give it a 2-year or 4-year with a visit accreditation. Now, if the program has some deficiencies that may go either way, they may call for a shorter term, or it may be corrected and bring the school into a position where it can go on for 6 years, you'll give it a so-called report action, which says that at the end of 2 years or at the end of 4 years, the school will file a report. If the ENA committee, after consultation with the original team member and chairman of the original team, meaning you, agrees that the report has corrected the deficiency noted at the time of the campus visit, the accreditation period may be extended for 2 years or 4 years. If the ECPD, the team chairman, or the regional chairman, I should say, on the recommendation of the team chairman and the former team member, says that it does not meet the deficiency has not been corrected, then it will call for another campus visit right then and there. So So the reports are important because they do have to do with the extension of accreditation. Now, in some instances, you're going to go into a school where the program does not meet the minimum standards of the profession on the day you're there. And this is what is called a show cause condition. What you do then is you recommend to the ENA committee, through your chairman, that the school be given a show cause statement, which tells the school that within 2 years, they must file a report showing cause as to why their accreditation should not be dropped. What this does is give the school 2 years to produce, under panic conditions, an accreditable position. What happens is that many schools turn around and really produce. And some of them say, well, this program isn't going to fly anyway, and they discontinue it. But what it does in effect is it keeps that particular school from continuing to give and offer a program that does not meet the minimum standards of the profession. On the other hand, there's nothing abrupt about it. The school has 2 years to shape up. Now, admittedly, under some circumstances, the ECPD could remove the accreditation instantly, and they have. I've seen that happen. But it doesn't happen very often. Well, those are the lengths of the accreditation. Now let's turn to the report that you're going to file. The confidential report I shan't say very much about because that is a personal document. You can put anything into that you wish. It should be, you should look upon it as what would you like the next guy to see when he goes to that school? What would you like to call to his attention? It's a personal document between you and him. Sure, the chairman of the team will read it, but there'll be very few other people that will read that document. So you can put into that anything you wish. The statement of the institution, on the other hand, is quite a different affair. The statement of the institution is a public document in the sense that it has to go out to the president of the institution, the dean, and the faculty of the school. Now, the ECPD does not allow these statements to be distributed wide and handsome, but they do get widely read at the school. In fact, every sentence is picked over, every comment is studied very, very carefully, and the credibility of the statement hinges on the ability of the faculty to pick it apart. If they cannot pick it apart, then that's a good statement. So the statement is extremely important in terms of guidance to the school and also in support of the accreditation action taken. Now you'll find in this accreditation packet suggestions on the writing of statements. In this particular document, you'll find several suggestions about statement writing. I'd like to phrase the suggestion somewhat differently, although I had a great deal to do with the writing of that particular document. But in a hope that I can give it a little different slant on this statement business, I will make a few additional comments. The writing of statements is becoming more and more important than it used to be. Many of the statements that you read that were written 6 years ago were not what I would consider to be very good statements. And in fact, 6 years from now, those statements just would not stand at all. The reason that I'm making these particular comments is that more and more, the element of accreditation is becoming a quasi-judicial activity, and the federal government is getting very much involved in the accreditation process. There have been many schools that have challenged accreditation associations on the basis that the judgments that were made were based on faulty premises. In some cases they have won, and in some cases they have not. And these have been in the courts. So therefore, the statement must be very incisive and must be very correct. And some of the wishy-washy statements that have been made heretofore just won't stand. In addition, the ECPD probably in the not too distant future will have to file a statement before they leave a statement of fact. And most other accrediting agencies do. They file some sort of a statement that states what they have found. So the school, and they file it in writing, so the school can respond and say, no, that's not correct because of, and so it goes. At the same time, the opinions and judgments are not given the school at that particular point. So the statement is becoming more and more important, and it always has been important in terms of guidance to the school to have them decide what they should be doing that they're not now doing. Now, in your statement, you want to be sure to touch on the same things that I've suggested you should consider in the evaluation. You ought to spend at least a paragraph discussing the faculty. You ought to spend at least a paragraph talking about the students. You ought to spend some part of the statement, the institution, on the facilities, the support staff, the finances, and the administration. Now, if the school is receiving a long-term accreditation, then many of the comments you make will be primarily those for the improvement of the state of affairs. And if you wish, you can separate your statement into two sections. The first section deals with the observations and the conclusions drawn that have affected the accreditation. You can include at the end a second section, which consists of observations that might be helpful to the school in improving the quality of their program. In other words, that's fatherly advice type of thing. Now, in the statement that you make, in the main body now, the one that has to do with the accreditation action, there ought to be four elements in every statement, in every sub-statement that you make. There ought to be some statement of ECPD or IEEE policy. There ought to be some supporting observation you have observed, or it was reported that. Then there ought to be a conclusion or a judgment based on the policy and the observations or report made. And finally, there would be then a recommendation. Now, the recommendation may or may not be made. For example, let's say that you found that the textbooks were in this particular program in electrical engineering were in a chaotic and deplorable state. They hadn't been paying attention to the search for new textbooks. Incidentally, I don't think this would ever happen because most faculties are poring over the text constantly, and if they don't, the students will suggest they do. But let's say they haven't. The statement of policy might go something like this. The ECPD believes that the quality of the textbooks used in a course has a great deal to do with the quality of the educational experience that a student is obtaining. It was observed that the average age of the textbooks employed in the curriculum of electrical engineering was 10 years, with some as old as 15 years. It was judged that these texts were not sufficiently modern, and therefore the quality of the educational experience was adversely affected. It is recommended that the faculty study this matter toward the objective of improving the quality of the textbooks used in their courses of study. Well, that gives you an idea of what you should be including in the statement. Remember that in every case, the statement must fit the action taken or recommended. Well, these are some of the thoughts as you go forth on this accreditation adventure that you may find helpful. I hope you enjoy yourself, and don't forget, you do represent the profession. Thank you.